If we could just for a few moments tonight, then turn in our Bibles to Genesis chapter 32. We took some time the other night to consider a moment in Esau's life, and the issue of these brothers, Jacob and Esau, that were born to Isaac and Rebekah, and the struggle that went on inside the womb, right? And Rebekah finally is pregnant and says, I don't know what's going on in there, but something's up. And God informs her that she is having twins, and these two are already in conflict. And Esau is born first. Jacob's not far behind, holding on to his heel, coming out of the womb, and the battles continued. Can't imagine what the house was like with these two boys growing up, always at war. And then we read that mom and dad took sides. Dad loved Esau. Isaac loved Esau because he was kind of a man's man. He was the hunter, outdoorsman, and dad loved him. They were close, and mom loved Jacob. And he was the homebody, loved to be home and cooking and just kind of under mom's wing all the time. And so there were these two camps within the same home. And we read about Jacob Esau selling his birthright. He comes home hungry and says, give me to eat. And Jacob sells him. Esau sells his birthright for the bowl of lentil soup. And from there, we go on a little bit further. We'll come back to this in a little bit. But from there, we go to Isaac, who's old and is coming close to death. At least he believes that. And so he wants to bless his son, his oldest son, Esau. That was just right. And so though Esau lost his birthright, sold that, he was still going to receive the blessing of Isaac. And so Isaac says, I want you to go out, Esau, and hunt and bring back some food and cook and prepare for me and bring it in. And I want to eat of that, and then I'm going to bless you. And mom was outside listening to this going on, and she connives with her son Jacob and says, listen, this blessing is to be yours. And so she gets dinner prepared and sets him up. Remember when Esau was born, the description of Esau as a baby was he was hairy as a cloak. And so now he's older and more hairy. And so mom sets it up, and they kill an animal, and they put the animal fur over Jacob. And Jacob goes in to dad and looks for the blessing. And Isaac, being blind at this point, can barely see. And so he suspects something, and he questions and you know, are you Esau? And Jacob's, yes, I'm Esau, and I'm here with the food. And they had the whole story straight, and dad wanted to feel him and says, you know, you feel hairy and you kind of smell like him, but something's just not adding up. But anyway, they went on with it. Jacob gets the blessing of his father. Esau comes in after that and realizes that the blessing now has been stolen from him. Not just did he lose the birthright, now he loses the blessing. And Esau is enraged. And so Esau now is looking to kill Jacob. And so mom grabs up Jacob and they go running. And he says, listen, you've got to get out of here. Esau will kill you. And so Jacob, basically with just what's on his back, runs and goes back to where Abraham originated. A far, far journey. Offhand, I'm thinking it was about 400 or 500 miles. And so that's a bit of a journey when you don't have a car, a plane, a bus, a train, or something. But there he set off for that land, gets there. And then he goes through the whole deal with, and this is a lot of chapters condensed, but most of you know the story, so just kind of work with me. Then he goes, and when he gets to the place where he was supposed to go, to Uncle Laban, he approaches their town and their home, and he comes to the well, and of course he's also looking for a wife, and comes to the well, and there he finds Rachel. Leah, Rachel. And so Rachel's there, and it's love at first sight, and he needs to marry this woman. And so he goes to his uncle Laban. They work a deal, and he says, you work 7 years for me, you get to marry my daughter. Didn't say which daughter, but he says, you'll get to marry my daughter. So 7 years, Jacob works for Laban, hard labor. And the time comes, I've served now, it's time for the wedding. And so they put this all together, they have the big ceremony, and in comes the bride, all dressed in white with the veil over her head. And they go through the whole thing. And now it's the end of the celebration. And Jacob, the husband, takes his bride into the tent, and they have their first night together, and Jacob wakes up and looks over at his new bride and finds out it's not the love of his life, Rachel, it's the older sister, Leah. And of course, Jacob, not ironic, but the deceiver deceived. Mm-hmm. You reap what you sow, and the one who deceived all his life is now tasting what that's like, and so he's now enraged and runs to Uncle Laban and says, what have you done? I've worked 7 years for Rachel. And he says, I didn't tell you. The tradition here is that you don't marry the youngest first, we marry the oldest daughter. So Leah is now your wife, but you want Rachel? That's not a problem. 7 more years of work. And one of the greatest love lines in all the universe is Jacob's line after that. And he served another 7 years, and to him it just didn't seem like any time at all because he was just so in love. 7 years. And so now he's got Leah, and he's got Rachel, and they've got trouble. And there are issues, and we get into the same deal, and who can't have children, and who's having their servants have children for them, and then the other, and the competition, and the warring that's going on. And so anyway, they deal with that, and another 6 years or so go by. And 20 years into this, and Jacob still hasn't heard from home. When his mom sent him away and said, run for your life, your brother's going to kill you, she said, I will send for you when it's safe. 20 years, there's no word that we have anyway, we would have to assume. He's never heard from home. And I imagine he'd think, I can't go back. He still wants to kill me. So he just kind of stayed. But there came a time now where just had to kind of deal with reality. He had grown wealthy, and you read the story there where worked a deal with Laban, and so now he ends up with all these herds, and his family is growing, and his servants are growing, and he's just outgrowing his space. And he says, I need to leave here. And so I've worked hard for you, I've blessed you with my labor, 20 years worth, and it's time for me to move on. And so reluctantly, Laban works a deal with him, and so Jacob takes off, sort of undercover. And so now Laban pursues, and they find him out kind of on their journey already, and they still everything that Jacob is doing is just a mess. Every relationship he's in has trouble, whether it's his dad, his brother, his uncle, now the servants of his uncle, and everywhere he turns, there's trouble in his life, and just seems to be the kind of character and person he is. But finally, he makes his way, and he's now on his journey back home, and he needs to deal with the big issue, and it's a brother back home that he assumes still wants to kill him. And so we pick this up in chapter 32, where Jacob is going on his way, and he sends messengers. We'll try to read some of it. We won't go through all of it. But Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau, his brother, in the land of Seir, the country of Edom, instructing them, thus you shall say to my lord Esau, thus says your servant Jacob, I have sojourned with Laban and stayed until now. I have oxen, donkeys, flocks, male servants, female servants. I have sent to tell my lord in order that I may find favor in your sight. So the messengers returned to Jacob, saying, "We came to your brother Esau. He's coming to meet you, and there are 400 men with him." Okay, so if you're Jacob now, the only thing you can believe now is you're in trouble. There's no positive word here. There's no encouraging word. It's just go tell him I want to talk with him, and I want to see if we can make things right. And they come back and say, he'd like to see you too with 400 men. And so Jacob's now scared, greatly afraid and distressed. So he divided the people who were with him, and the flocks and the herds, the camels, into two camps, thinking if Esau comes to the one and attacks and kills them, then the camp that is left can escape. So this is just good war strategy. Jacob said, "O God of my father Abraham, God of my father Isaac, O Lord, who said to me, 'Return to your country and to your kindred that I may do you good. I'm not worthy of the least of all the deeds of steadfast love and all the faithfulness that you have shown to your servant, for with only my staff I crossed this Jordan, and now I've become two camps. Please deliver me from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him that he may come and attack me, the mothers with the children. But you said, I will surely do you good and make your offspring as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude.' And he stayed there that night. From what he had with him, he took a present for his brother Esau: 200 female goats and 20 male goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams, 30 milking camels, their calves, 40 cows, 10 bulls, 20 female donkeys and 10 male donkeys. Handed them over to his servants, every drove by itself, and said to his servants, 'Pass on ahead of me, put a space between drove and drove.'" And basically what he says here in these next verses is, you take this bunch of animals and you go to Esau and you present it and say, "There's more coming. Jacob, you know, is here to bless you." And then the next crew would come with their herd, and they'd say, "Here, we want to present this to you. This is from your brother Jacob, and there's more coming." And the next one would come, and they say, "Here, Jacob wants to make things right. This is a gift for you, and there's more coming." And so he had them kind of one after the other, all of these groups of animals and herds. They would be all presented one after the other, trying to make a big statement to Esau. And then he says in verse 20, "Perhaps he will accept me when he finally sees me." And so the present passed on ahead of him, and he himself stayed that night in the camp. The same night he arose, and he took his two wives, his two female servants, his 11 children, and he crossed the ford of the Jabbok. He took them and sent them across the stream and everything else that he had. And Jacob was left alone. And a man wrestled with him until the breaking of the day. And when the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched his hip socket, and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. And then he said, "Let me go, for the day has broken." Jacob said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." And he said to him, "What is your name?" And he said, "Jacob." Then he said, "Your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed." Then Jacob asked me, "Please tell me your name." But he said, "Why is it that you ask my name?" And there he blessed him. So Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, saying, "For I have seen God face to face, and yet my life has been delivered." The sun rose upon him as he passed Peniel, limping because of his hip. Therefore, to this day, the people of Israel do not eat the sinew of the thigh that is on the hip socket, because he touched the socket of Jacob's hip on the sinew of the thigh. Very quickly, we'll just get the big picture here that I can send you home with. We've heard several of your testimonies tonight already. You've been here. God has been at work. I think I've heard this every end of every period of 52 years. I don't remember all of them, but the ones I can remember, it's almost always the same story. I've had the same story, the same testimony, the same prayer and hope. God has blessed me here. God has worked in my life here, but I know the deal when I leave. And I'm just believing God that he'll keep me, not just survive another year, but I don't want to go back to lukewarm and and passionless and just kind of going through the motions and dragging myself to church and dragging myself to read the Bible and trying to get enough energy and passion to pray. I don't want to do that anymore. I want to take what God has done here. I want to bring it home with me into the everyday. And it's different. Listen, we understand it's different. It'd be nice if we could live every day like this on the mountaintop, like Peter, James, and John. It is good to be here. Can't we just settle here and build our tents or live in the cabins and not go back down into the world? This is good to be in your presence. We've seen the glory of God. We have beheld you and we have sensed your presence in a way we have never sensed it before. We'd like to stay here. They couldn't, nor can we. And so the reality is, it's tough. We know it's tough. It's different. So we're going to face challenges as we go back. But we can go back in great victory. And I believe God just in some kind of basic lessons we can just learn from this story tonight that maybe will just help us a little bit in this last gathering before we head back into the real world down from the mountain. Jacob was a manipulator, self-centered deceiver. I mean, that's his name, right? That's what his name means, a supplanter with everybody around him and with God. Jacob was a wheeler and dealer and manipulator even with God. He had a vision of a ladder in chapter 28. You remember that vision? He's at night and he's dreaming, and there's this ladder set up on earth, and the top of it reached to heaven, and the angels of God were ascending and descending, and there's this incredible moment. And in this encounter with God, Jacob makes a vow early in the morning. He took the stone he put under his head and set it up as a pillar. He poured oil on top of it. He called the name of the place Bethel. And then in verse 20 of chapter 28, Jacob made a vow. Listen to the vow Jacob makes with God. If God will be with me and will keep me in this way that I go, right there's a problem. We don't come to God with the conditions. God comes to us with the conditions. But here's Jacob who goes to God and says, God, here's my deal for you. Here's what you'll get. If you do this for me, here's my vow, God. If you'll be with me, if you'll keep me, if you'll give me bread to eat, if you give me clothing to wear, so that I come again to my father's house in peace, then you'll be my God. Listen, we do that a lot. I go to prayer meetings all the time, and I hear those kinds of prayers. I see it, I hear it in the stories and the words and the heart of people. If God does this, then he'll be my God. If God doesn't do these things, well, I lose my faith, I'm angry, I'm mad, I'm not going to do this now. But if God accommodates me and does everything that I tell him to do, then he will be graced with me. And it's so backwards. But this is Jacob. This is his head. This is where he's at. Not just with man, but he wants to wheel and deal and manipulate God. And so we're back to 32, and we have an encounter here. Let's look at this with fresh eyes, because we typically hear this story, at least I have most of my life, I've heard this story preached one way. And the way I've always heard it, and much of my life, I understood it, that Jacob is quite the passionate seeker after God. Right? When you read this, that I think is what most of us heard. Give Jacob credit. Pat on the back. He is going to wrestle God all night long until he receives the blessing. And wow, if I could just have that kind of passion to seek God with fervor and perseverance, I will not let you go till you bless me. But that's not what this says at all. Jacob sends his family over the creek. And now he's by himself and he's scared. And his life is on the line, so he thinks. Everything has been a disaster from home 20 years ago to the past 20 years with Uncle Laban and his two wives that are warring and his children that are, I mean, they've got issues galore, and he is a broken man, and everything is out of sorts, and so he finds himself alone. Nowhere does it say he's seeking after God or looking to God for help. Seems that that's the farthest thing from his mind, but God comes after him. And we read there that God initiates this battle through the night. Isn't that what it says? Verse 24, Jacob was left alone and a man wrestled with him until the breaking of the day. The man saw that he didn't prevail against Jacob and he touched his hip socket. Now, listen, you may not relate to that, but I want to tell you, this was not a pleasant experience for Jacob. Some of you may be new and haven't heard, I've mentioned a few times, I've got some good stories. I had a hip replaced 2 months ago, so I've got all kinds of fun stories to tell. Just gives us something to talk about. But for 6 months, I never had a hip problem. Ever. Never knew. I've always had real bad knees, and I've always had issues dealing with that, but I never had a hip problem that I knew of, and I'm just minding my business, and right around Christmas time, I start feeling this pain I thought was in my knee, because I've always had the knee problem, and it was kind of working its way up and down my thigh, my leg, and everywhere else, and I went to the doctor, where I've always been for all kinds of injuries that I've had, sports mostly, and I went back to him. I said, my knee is really bad. And so we started treating the knee, and after about 3 or 4 weeks, I started, you know, sensing this something's not right. And I went back in, and we said, you know what, I'm feeling more my hip. I don't know what's going on. And we started looking at that, and sure enough, my hip's all messed up. And from December, where I never had a problem, to June, they're cutting me in half and sawing out my bones and putting a new hip. But for those 6 months, when my hip was out of place, and it wasn't quite this out of place, but it just messes you up. Some of you know what that's like. Something happens, and this just happened to be my hip, so when I read this, I'm thinking, wow, this is not good to live the rest of your life like that. I couldn't imagine. For 6 months, I was depressed. Really, I'm serious. I couldn't do anything. I lay in bed in the morning, and I just think, God, please, just make it stop, and don't make me get out of bed today, because it hurt to get out of bed. It hurt to go in the shower. It hurt to get dressed. It hurt to get in the car. It hurt to walk across a parking lot. It hurt to visit someone in the hospital. It hurt to come back home. It hurt to sit on the couch. Everything hurt all the time, and I couldn't think about anything else except this. Every step I took was a project. Maybe we'll get to that at the end, but here's his deal. And so in the moment, this angel, and most students and scholars of the word believe that this angel wasn't just an angel. Many believe this was Jesus himself, a pre-incarnate revelation, Jesus wrestling with Jacob. And this hip gets knocked out of joint. There's a woman in my church, just bear with me, and we won't be much later, but there's a woman in my church, when we were here second period, she had her hip replaced back in January. So she was right at about 6 months, just over 6 months, and they say by 6 months, everything's, you kind of sort of can get back to the normal things that you do. And so she's at 6 months, and everything's supposed to be normal. And we get a phone call here on a Monday, which happened to be our prayer night, and just before our prayer time, we get a phone call and says, would you pray for Kathy? She bent over the wrong way, which, as I told you, there are some things you're supposed to do and can't do, and she bent a certain way, which should have been all right at 6 months, but she popped her hip out. And this was her replaced hip 6 months, and it's popped out. And long story short, when I heard that, my knees almost buckled because I know a little bit of that pain, and I could not imagine the intensity of that pain. And she's gone through chemotherapy. She's had breast cancer, all sorts of surgery. She's gone through the mill. She has suffered physically, and she's about my age. And she related after the fact, she says, I have never in my life felt such pain like that. So they bring her in the hospital, the emergency room, and the thing you're supposed to do when your hip pops out of joint is pop it back in, just like that. And so that's what they tried to do. So you got a hip out of joint, and you got doctors and nurses now trying to stretch you apart to pull that, because the joint pops out like that, and you got to pull the thing back down and get it into. And so they're trying to do this while she's enjoying the pain, and it wouldn't work, and it just made it worse. Finally, they had to put her in general anesthesia and go into the operating room, and they didn't have to re-operate, but they were able to manipulate it with her completely knocked out and not fighting in pain and do that. And she said when she woke up, just like that, felt better. But during that, she said, never, with all that I have gone through physically, chemotherapy, radiation, cancer, I have never felt intense pain like that. Now, I don't know his story, but I know this is not a pleasant moment when his hip socket is knocked out of joint. And in that moment of desperation, he lays hold of this angel, Jesus, likely, and he says, I am not letting you go. I want a blessing. And what's the question asked? What is it? What's your name? Does that ring a bell? Mm-hmm. Ring a bell? Just read it 20 years before. I want a blessing. I want a blessing. Father, I'm here for your blessing. What's your name? I'm Esau. 20 years later, still on the run from that experience. What's your name? I'm Esau. I want your blessing. 20 years on the run, and he's back to that place. I want your blessing. And here, God confronts him. You want my blessing? What's your name? Can you imagine in that moment? What's my name? It's Jacob. It's deceiver. It's planter. And he's got to look square at himself now. This is who I am. And this is what I've become. And I have run, and I've hid, and I have dealt wickedly and deceptively, and I've lied, and I've cheated, and I've run from God. Listen, this is a man. 2 generations before Abraham, I promise to bless you. And through your seed, I will bless all nations. And Isaac is born through that promise. And now Jacob is born and given a promise. This is to be the fulfillment. This is the line. Messiah is going to come, but here's a man so far removed from God. What's your name? He comes face to face with who he is and what he's about. And he says, I'll bless you, but we're going to change your name. We're going to change your character. We're going to change your person. We're going to change your heart. No longer Jacob. And God deals with him in a deep spiritual way in that moment. So if we can just kind of wrap it up, we don't have time to dig deeper to do that on your own. But listen, there are some incredible things here for us to grasp. One is, we heard it earlier, we heard it a couple times tonight already, how God pursues us. We heard in John chapter 9, here's a blind man and the chaos going on in his life, but Jesus goes after him. Was it this morning we made reference to Hagar, right? She's the outcast woman. She's the one when the whole scheme and plan of Sarah and Abraham now is falling apart, and she's so broken. This wasn't her doing. She's brought into their nonsense, and now she's a pawn in their game, and she's broken, and she's scared, and she's hurt, and she's in pain, and so she runs. God pursues her in the wilderness and says, Where are you going? What are you doing? And God in his mercy and grace, Hagar. I mean, that moment in their life, Hagar, Ishmael, that just messed everything up. I mean, not just then, today. It has such an impact on the world. Look at the headlines. That's Esau. That's Hagar. But God, merciful, gracious, in that moment says, I'm not letting you run from me. I still have something for you. How about a Rahab in the city of Jericho? I can't figure that story apart from the grace and mercy and love of God. Because they went to this place 40 years earlier. They sent 12 spies across the river. Moses says, check out the land. Let's see what's going on. 10 spies come back and says, we're doomed. We can't go in there. 2 spies, Joshua and Caleb, come back and say, no, God's given this to us. But because of their lack of faith and trust in God, God says, no, you're not going to possess that land now. So for 40 years, they just kind of marched in circles in the wilderness. 40 years later, the generations die off, and God says, okay, now it's time, let's go back in there. And he says, okay, everybody ready to go? Wait, 1 minute. Let's go back in and spy the land again. What? Do you ask the question why? Didn't 40 years ago we do this? So we're going to go and spy the land. What do you want us to come out and say? We shouldn't do it? We said that 40 years ago, and here we are. So we're going to go and spy this land out. We're coming out with one answer. Let's go. Doesn't matter what they look like, because we're not going 40 years back out there. So there was only going to be one answer. Why do you stop 2+ million people? Why do you stop them from going across when you know you're going across no matter what? The only thing I can get out of that, the only answer I get, I may be slow, maybe I haven't looked at all. If you have a better angle, let me know. But the only reason I can see God saying stop and let's go back in and check it out one more time is because there is a harlot on the wall. And God in mercy and grace stops 2 million people, leaves the 99 for the sake of one. Says, there's a woman there, and that woman, go read Matthew and the genealogies of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. There's the woman Rahab, the harlot, who was on a wall in that city, and God said, wait a minute, we've got to get to that woman. God pursues in grace and mercy. It's the story of a prodigal son. In our rebellion, we run, and the Father every day is waiting and looking, and the silhouette on the horizon starts him running down the road. He is in pursuit of us. Constant, where can I run from your presence, oh God? Where can I hide? And Paul says, I have been overtaken, right, in Philippians. God, Jesus Christ, has overtaken me. I was running as fast as I could, but God in his mercy and grace has overtaken me. He has caught up to me. He has tackled me. He has saved me. It's all him. And this is the story of Jacob. Minding his business. Feared. Worry. Messed up everything. Doesn't know what's going to happen tomorrow. But God had a plan for Jacob. Whether he knew it or received it or believed it, God had a plan. And God says, I am not done with you. What I need you to do, Jacob, is to look yourself square in the face and tell me who you are. Acknowledge it. Confess it. Deal with it. And let me change your heart. Jacob, if you'll just surrender yourself to me, I'll bless you. I'll use you, I'll carry you, I'll take you, I'll fulfill my plan and purpose for you. Surrender, Jacob. And in this wonderful moment, God deals graciously. And God is here tonight to do the same with us and for us. And I don't know exactly where you're at. I don't know what your story is. I don't know how you've been running or how you've been struggling. I don't know the plan God has for your life personally, individually, but I know this: God is pursuing us. And he's looking for us to come to a place of complete surrender. God, I acknowledge I have failed. I have run. I don't even know where to turn. I don't know where to begin to fix the mess I'm in. Everywhere I turn, I've burned bridges. I've messed up relationships. I've got no friend. I've got no help. I've got no support. I feel abandoned. I'm scared. And God is here tonight to assure us he has not forgotten. He has not abandoned. He has pursued us to this moment. I don't know why you're here. I've heard bits and pieces. Somebody said, I didn't want to be here. I don't want to come. And I thought I was going home 2 weeks ago, and they were desperate, and they asked me. I couldn't say no. And so here I am. And I don't know why you're here tonight, but you are. And I believe God wants to do a work. If we would surrender to him, listen, this next year, 10 months, 11 months, whatever it is, till we find ourselves back on the mountain, this next year, God can do incredible, amazing things for us if we just surrender. God, I'm yours. I'm yours. And Lord, I pray tonight that you would work that in our hearts and in our lives. You know where we are, each of us. Thankfully, I know there are some here that have walked close with you. Their story isn't one of regret, and they've walked in your presence, and they're in your will, and they're experiencing their victory and joy, and they're serving you, and it's good. But they need you tonight, dear God, and we've come to surrender completely again. There are some here that are struggling. Some here not sure what tomorrow holds. Some that are afraid to leave this place. It's secure, it's safe. And we're tired, and we really do want to go home, but I'm afraid what's going to happen. I know the cycle, and I pray, Lord, tonight, for each of us that are fearful of that and don't want to go back to that, I pray, Lord, that this would be a moment of surrender to you. You have pursued us to this moment for a purpose, not just to say it was a nice couple weeks, now go ahead back to your deal. You have pursued us to this moment for a reason. And I pray, Lord, you'd give us grace to surrender completely to you. That you would change our hearts, change our nature, change our names, our character, everything about us. God, change us, bless us, keep us, and use us. Lord, again, above all, we are just in awe and so thankful of your amazing grace, your love, and your mercy. That you have pursued us. That you've confronted us. that you won't leave us in the place of sin and of self and of failure and of fear, but you have come to us. And you want to change things in our hearts and lives. And so, Lord, we are so thankful. And so we surrender. We surrender, oh God. Have your way. In closing, I know we're torn right now. We've got a couple hours to finish up. We've got to pack. We want to get to bed. Maybe last minute things have to be dealt with. But it's also our last night to be here. And some of you may need to just go and deal with what you have to deal with. But some of you need to stay and just get a hold of God and let God get hold of you. And just spend a little bit more time on your face before Him. And however God leads you tonight, we'll leave that to you. But in closing, hymn number 90 in your white hymnals, let's sing this prayer. Hymn number 90. And then just, if you need to be dismissed, God bless you. If you want to stay, find a place of prayer, just feel free to do that. Amen.
subdue us.